Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
God dag, god dag och välkomna till ännu en rockpodd. Det här är inte vilken rockpodd som helst. Det här är Rock Bottom med mig, Anders Tegner, och
Erika heter jag.
Den vackraste av oss. Nu var jag snäll.
Du pratar om dig själv nu?
Nej, jag pratar om dig.
Oh, tack så mycket.
Det är mycket snyggare än jag är.
Du brukar alltid göra någonting okontrollerat och ofiltrerat,
ja,
när det gäller
mig. Ja, vänta en stund bara.
Jag blir så chockad att du säger någonting snällt. Det är några så här märkliga kontaktannonser eller som du brukar hålla på med eller något annat pinsamt.
Ja, du bäddar ju som du ligger.
Ja, ensam.
Idag har vi tyvärr ett tråkigt besked, ska vi kanske säga. Antingen beror det på att vi är fullständigt otekniska.
Så kan det vara.
Eller också är det divine intervention som inte ville att det skulle bli som det blev. Men vi gjorde alldeles nyligen en intervju med Eric från det fantastiska bandet Testament.
Yes.
Ett av de riktigt klassiska av de här lite tuffare amerikanska banden. Det var ju lite grann Anthrax, Metallica. De slogs ju där.
The Big Four.
Och de var här och de är still going strong. Och vi sitter och pratar
turnerar
med honom.
På Brotherhood of the Snake-plattan.
Precis. Mm. Och vi gjorde en fantastiskt bra intervju.
Ja!
Ja. Men våran inspelningsutrustning ville inte riktigt hänga med.
För första gången.
Så att när vi kom hem och lyssnade på det så var bara andra kvarten av den här halvtimmen inspelad. Den första fanns inte på kortet.
Nej, fanns inte på kartan.
Nej, och det är ju ingenting vi kan göra någonting åt, för vi kan ju inte göra om det. Så att kvällens, eller dagen ska vi säga, det låter alltid bättre att säga kvällens, för att det är liksom,
kvällare,
i rock'n'roll är mera kvällsgrejer. Men man får helt enkelt bara dyka in i en intervju och lyssna på Erik, för han har mycket kul kvar att berätta.
Vi snackade ju om allt möjligt. Vi frågade om till exempel hur många medlemmar Testament hade haft. Ja. Det visste vi.
Ja, vi visste det. Men han hade inte riktigt koll, för att ett tag där i början på 2000-talet så bytte de ju medlemmar som du bytte trosor. Minst en gång i månaden.
Ja, där kom den.
och då är det lite svårt att hålla reda på det, hur många det var. Men 23 stycken medlemmar har kommit och gått. En del har kommit tillbaka också.
Ja.
Så, och han berättade också om det här när de startade, att de var influerade av det var både Black Sabbath och Deep Purple och även samtida band då, som Metallica och sånt som de började lyssna på. Att det rådde någon ganska kaxig stämning i San Francisco och det området.
De supportade ju varandra, alla de här banden.
Det gjorde de. Och att det var ett sound som precis som Seattle-soundet kom. Som man kunde knyta det här soundet till just The Bay Area, som de säger. Att det är San Francisco-soundet. Och om det beror på att det jämnt regnar där, det vet jag inte faktiskt.
Nej, så pratade vi om The Ritual, albumet från 92, som var en stor kommersiell succé. Och frågade vad var det som gjorde att den blev så populär. Och då svarade Eric ungefär att de satte ett litet mål att de skulle bli kommersiellt stora. Och att det där var något som orsakar lite slitningar inom bandet för att man måste vara true.
Mm.
Och samtidigt så ska man ju, som man sa, kunna betala räkningarna.
Ja. Så då är det en liten kompromiss.
Ja,
precis. Men det var ju bra.
Det blev mycket bra. Vi kliver in i den här intervjun då. Då har vi pratat om just det här med medlemsbyten och han ville få tillbaka sin gamla gitarrist. Gitarristen däremot, han var inte så intresserad. Han hade fått för sig att han skulle bli en seriös jazzmusiker. Så han stod nere på någon jazzklubb och lirade någonting dissonant. Och medan publiken stod och skrek testament, testament! Och då så kliver Eric in där och säger, kan du inte komma tillbaka till bandet? Ungefär där kommer vi in i intervjun.
Ja, så varsågod. Det här är Eric från Testament. You know, I'm going to go visit my old pals, whatever. But he came there. It was a sold-out show. People were freaking out. He came on stage, and here's Alex playing in a jazz band in front of maybe 50, 100 people. You know, people screaming testament to him all the time, and he's trying to play his jazz, going, no, I'm fucking a jazz player now. I don't do testament. And he could never get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So he went on stage, and people were freaking out. And I think he went home going, wow. Like, maybe this is where I'm supposed to be. So a year later, we had another guitar change, and we were talking about who was going to be the guy. And I told Chuck, I go, unless we can get the original guys back, I don't want to do this anymore. It's getting to be kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we made a phone call. sorry, my voice is going out.
No, okay.
Lou and Alex agreed to do, like, I think it was, we were going to do 7 shows in May.
And when was this?
In 2005. And that turned into 2 more shows. Oh, now Japan wants 2 shows. And we never went home. We were out for like a year.
Wow.
You know, we just, no, now you guys are going here. Oh, now you're going here. And we just, before I know it was 2007, and then Nuclear Blast was showing up. We were in Germany, and, you know, I think we even inked our deal on stage. We stopped the show. We brought the contract out in front of the fans, and that was kind of cheesy, but
no, that's
we wanted people to know that we were signing a record deal,
right?
Of course,
a new one, and then from there it was just like the rebirth.
But was it like coming back to the old days after 23 members?
At first, you know, remember we were playing Demonic, The Gathering, Low, all these. We were heavier again, but when we did the reunion thing, we went back and we were playing the older stuff. So we started having to submit, you know, DNR, 3 Days in Darkness, Demonic, Low, Dogface Gods, like song. And Alex, remember, was just like, you know, well, what do I do? Because, you know, in the old days, it was like lead guitar, player, rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's turned into, I mean, it still is like that, but now we consider ourselves, we're just guitar players. You know, we both do what we do.
At one point, there was just you and Chuck in the band. Was there a time when virtually Testament wasn't around anymore?
Yeah, it was probably about a month, and that was the Demonic material, and we were going to be called Dogface Gods, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that record's so heavy, and it's all death metal singing, is it was written for that purpose. The label was like, you know, when we turned it in, they heard it and they're like, you know, the Dogface Gods is cool. And, you know, we have the logo but then they're like, but if you use Testament, you know, it'll sell. And, you know, we're just, no. But then when we thought about it, we're like, it would be nice to sell records right away and not have to start all over again. Because, you know, starting over is hard. And at this point, we had been together for 15 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we did it.
Tell us about the Brotherhood of the Snake. What came about with that, and how did you...
Your latest
offering. Yeah.
Yeah. That one was written... So we had so much touring going on after Dark Roots of Earth. I think Chuck kept telling the fans, you know, we got a record coming out, you know, next month.
Or, mm-hmm,
we're going to start writing. But we all weren't really agreeing when we were going to do it.
It wasn't until we had an offer to play with the Monomarth in Europe, and we were like, Monomarth, like, they're a new band, like, why would we open for... But then when we seen their numbers and how many people they play in front of, we're like, well, maybe it'd be a good idea mm-hmm. to get in front of some kids and whatnot. But we had to have a new record out. So we tried to schedule when we could write the record together. It turned out that every time we tried to schedule something, the other guys were doing death, or Alex was doing this or doing that. So Chuck and myself kind of had to just write it in my bedroom with the ghost drummer and put it together. And I think it came out great. I mean,
I love it. I love Neptune Spear and Blackjack. I think they're great songs.
Yeah, I mean, so there was a lot of stuff that I had libraried. And I don't even remember having the riffs. I just would come home and press record and just sit on my couch and just... I knew I'd be recording for 10 minutes, but then after that, you start watching TV and I'm like, stop record, you know, go to bed, do the same thing the next day, go on tour, come back a month later, press it, and I'm like, whatever. Well, what was that? You know, there was always that like 5 seconds of something. So I'd go back there and I'd figure it out. And then, you know, oh, wait, I could do this over that. So there, I guess probably half of it was like that. And then maybe some other songs were older, like Neptune Spear was actually going to be a song on Formation of Damnation.
Oh.
And it, we actually recorded it.
Really?
Oh. But Chuck didn't write lyrics to it. So we never, that never went on the record. I'm kind of glad because we waited and we added some more things to it. Made it. It wasn't exactly the way it is. We kind of fixed it up and made it work a little bit better.
I mean, the solo is almost like neoclassical.
Yeah, that was something that was really cool. Was, you know, influenced off after Bach.
Mm.
How have you been forced to change your approach to the world, really? I mean, you started out in an analog world with album sales and physical records. There was albums and cassettes. And then, of course, during the 90s, that was pretty much the same thing. But in the new millennium, things started to change with downloads and the lack of record sales. When you do a new record now, what is it you focus on to make sure people get it out and you can actually get paid for what you're doing?
Well, we do the same thing as we normally do. We just try to write good songs and be a fan of what we're doing. You know, not think of, like, is this going to sell? To me, it's got to feel, I got to be able to feel it in my heart, like, you know, something that I wouldn't want to listen to. You know, I'll take the tape and listen to my car driving. If I don't like it, then I'm not going to bother with it. So, and I usually don't introduce a riff to anybody unless I like it. Even if maybe they go, hey, what was that you play? And if I don't like it, I'm going to go, no. But it's got to come from the heart, I think, music. As far as the other stuff, what you do after, I think we're all still trying to figure that out.
What's the incentive for fans to actually buy a record rather than just listen to it on Spotify?
Well, I know metal, especially Nuclear Blast, is they're putting vinyl out again, and they're having bundles where they have, you know, get a t-shirt, you know, special artwork. And that's the one thing about metal is art is a big part of a record, you know, telling the story visually of what the song's about. I think that's important, especially like the older records that we used to listen to, like 2112 or, you know, Kiss or any of that stuff. Just looking at the cover and then listening to the music, it's like, wow, this is cool. And then you got, you know, commercial music, like you got the Cars. You know, you look at those record covers, it's like boring. You know, it's like Andy Warhol, whatever his name is. See, I don't even know his name. Kind of art. I mean, you can't sit there and look at it and listen to the song, because you're not going to do that. It's more you're in the elevator.
I think the Cars had an album with some pretty hot chicks on the cover.
Well, yeah, and, you know, if you can make it out of the bathroom.
but what about social media and your interaction with the fans today, which is much easier now with the tools that weren't available
back then? There's good stuff and bad stuff. So that's what, you know, I guess a lot of people are trying to. There's Instagram now, and you know, tweeting and all that.
And you do all that?
I do Instagram. I have Facebook and Twitter, but I don't do those. I don't have time. I do Instagram. That's fun. I like to do that. So
We always finish off by asking about your cringe song.
But if you have any ideas, let me know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the cringe song.
Yeah, song that you love, but that's not, you wouldn't really admit it in an interview. It's not something that's really something to be proud about.
It's not kosher.
No.
Well, then why would I tell you that?
Well, because...
Because we ask everybody. And it gives a new dimension to the people.
Pretty please. It can be something from your childhood, perhaps, or a silly commercial or something. Just a song that it's kind of cheesy, but
so
that
something
like.
That I really like, though.
Yeah.
You really like it, but it wouldn't be, you know...
Yeah, everybody would go, what?
Yeah, you like that song?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I like Lil Uzi Vert. He's a rapper. It's a song called Little Mammy. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
So, look that up.
Do you just when you listen to music today, have you broadened your horizons, so to speak? Have you started to listen to other stuff than you did 20 years ago?
Well, yeah, I have kids, so 14 and 19, and they listen to a whole different thing of music, and just I see how their friends react, and Snapchat or whatever it's called, just the way they're talking and what they're listening to. So I give it a chance, I'll listen to it and see what. Most of the time I get really upset and go, this sucks.
Don't you understand? This sucks.
You can almost draw it out like some guy jamming like 21 hours of rehearsing a day and, years of practicing and, 6-minute epic song and, just a lot put into it. Then you got the fan, they're like, meh. And then you got this really good looking kid, plays two chords. And he's talking about some girl, and everybody's going, yeah. And you're just like, what?
It is crazy.
We're getting old.
Do you see the successors of the classic bands who are now in their 70s, a lot of them, and people are saying, there's no future for hard rock. We don't see those arena bands coming from the new.
I mean, certain areas, like where I live, Sacramento, I think like hip-hop's really big. But then if you go to like here, Sweden or something, I think hard rock is very alive, But the youth is definitely, they need to be schooled a little bit. And I think it'll come around. I've seen it go away, come back, come around. There's going to be some kid band that's going to come out and do kind of what we're doing, but they're going to do something. I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to put a twist on it and it's going to be killer.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be proud and go, thank you.
Have you recently heard any band that really, wow, that's a good band?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of bands that I think are great, but not like brand new.
I was thinking the younger kids who are actually doing rock, but
not
in their
rock,
way.
Not rock, no. I mean, let's see. Do you know any?
Let's think about it.
Well, I'm pretty stuck in the 70s myself.
yeah, me too. I was listening to the Eagles in my car, and my daughter was listening to it, and she was kind of singing along, and I was like, man, there's no more music like this anymore, where it's just so good, melodic, and even the solo. I forgot how good the solos were.
Stunning band,
just
Eagles.
Like really good melodic, almost like it could be in Merciful Fate. Mm-hmm. Just thirds and just like I didn't even know that lead was there actually.
Right. So to finish off, is it as wild and crazy in the tour bus these days as it was in the 80s?
Of course not. We got the internet.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.